Ben Bartsch out through signals and calls for the waist high snap. He's got it. Jaguars rushing for. He's got time, and it's intercepted. Mathis has got it. He's going back the other way at the 40-yard line. Looking for a block. He's got it. Machine down the sideline. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Touchdown, Machine Mathis.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, glad you're along with us on this Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. Machine Mathis in the house today to retire as a Jacksonville Jaguar, and we will definitely look back historically along with you at the Jags' defensive history. Tony, you kind of nodding along as we were discussing Rasheen Mathis's place. Is he at the top of your list of the best defensive players, or is he just in the conversation for you?
No, I think he is at the top. I think the conversation from there for me probably goes to which of those guys between Stroud and Henderson you like more. I probably lean towards Henderson in that, but I think Rasheen Mathis is, like you said, there's nobody else to play corner here that I feel like you can even make the argument for being ahead of Rasheen Mathis. I feel like it's hard to make an argument for anybody in the secondary as good as Donovan Darius was. And look, Darryl Smith was here. He was a part of this team when they made the runs in 2005 and 2007. He was on this roster and playing significant amounts of time. So was Rasheen Mathis. And that's the guy defensively that you remember making those big plays for this football team the last time that they were any good. It was Rasheen Mathis. And the fact that the last couple years here he got beat up as much as he did by the fans, we've talked about it I don't know how many times. It's a little bit unfair to blame Rasheen Mathis for how bad the Jaguars defense was. It's one guy it felt like three other guys in a secondary around him that didn't know what they were doing. And a lot of times it left Rasheen looking very, very bad. Doesn't mean he didn't have bad plays while he was here in Jacksonville, but the fact that he went to Detroit and for 2.5 years held off some young guys that they were drafting highly in the first and second round to try to improve that secondary, they couldn't get on the field ahead of Rasheen Mathis until last year when he finally decided, you know what, I'm going to retire from the game after last season. So, yeah, I think Rasheen in the end is number one for me.
And I think, you know, you're right, and Jeff is right to a degree. It is weird the way people perceive him. I do think you still, as I talk to people about Rasheen Mathis, Jaguar fans, yeah, man, he was overrated. Or, yeah, wow, he really tailed off at the end. And did he play his best football at the end? No, he didn't. But he played that position here in Jacksonville so far ahead of the field and was the most dangerous defensive player who ever got his hands on the football for the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's no question about that. So today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you to rank who you feel are the top five defensive players in team history. You don't have to go with Rasheen Mathis, obviously. Rank them in order, and we'll try to compile those towards the end of the show, see where your thoughts lay with that. Brian Sexton's been a member of the Jaguar organization since day one. He's going to join us a little bit later on in the program, about 30 minutes from now, and he's going to go through his own personal list of the top five defensive players. It'll be interesting to see what his criteria are. John Osher the other day said he thought that you put Tony Brackens at the top of the list because at his best, he was the best, and that's fine. If you want it, look, it's your criteria, however you want to weigh it, to find the best defensive players, however you would like to do it. But certainly I think Brackens is under consideration for the top spot, as well as certainly a spot at least in those top five. The Pearl Jam concert tonight, Tony, you going to the Pearl Jam concert?
I am not, no.
By the way, neither am I. I mean, this is one that had I thought about it a little bit more, maybe I would have made a plan to go there. You know what we always threaten to do a day? And it's difficult to do on this show because people tune in and they want their NFL, they want their Jaguar talk, and that's what this show's about. We understand that. And you and I like to deviate to a little pop culture every now and then. It was a lot easier to do when we just did kind of the all sports show before, but I always threatened to want to do a show one day just about nothing but misheard song lyrics, right? So lyrics that you thought you knew what the song was.
Sure.
And it meant nothing. It was nowhere close to what the actual lyrics were. There is no finer example of the art of misheard lyrics than all you have to do is go put something about Pearl Jam misheard lyrics, but specifically Yellow Ledbetter misheard lyric. You will lose your mind if you go to YouTube and watch one of the Yellow Ledbetter misheard lyric songs. And honestly, now when I hear that song, I think more about the misheard lyrics version than I do the actual words of that song. I'm telling you, Tyler, do you know the real words to this song? Does anyone know the real words to this song?
I don't know the real words, but I actually have gone and watched a, like, lyrical video, and the lyrics don't match up to anything close to what you're trying to say.
There's a picture of Anna Nicole Smith with her ankle in a cast, and there's one part where they say, Anna Nicole, mama say that she don't want to see Anna fall down again. And you're like, that is what he said! That is exactly what Eddie Vedder said. I'm telling you, there's something about a wizard and a whale in here, too. I've watched that video so many times. So if you're going to Pearl Jam tonight, you can tell us where they rank among their all-time favorite bands. I've said this for years, Tony, only because it's true. The last new music that I personally have bought in a long time, it was Pearl Jam's second album. Was that 10? Was that the second album? Was
it called? I don't know the order.
Whatever the first. I bought the first two albums when they came out on CD. Still have them. My wife did buy me the latest Adele, but I didn't purchase it myself. And probably the last CD I bought, because I don't download music.
Versus was their second released album.
Versus was the second one?
Yep. 10 was their first one.
10 was the first one. Versus was the second one. Okay, so I had both of those. Still have both of those. I think I bought the Commodore's Greatest Hits. So I know for a fact, as a matter of fact, that was the most recent music that I purchased, but... not much for the old iTunes thing.
Apparently not.
And all that stuff. Although I did watch The Voice again last night. And now you know, at least I know, why they save the best for last on the show every night. Because the girl who sang Janis Joplin absolutely killed it at the end. But the night before. And the girl last night who closed the show was phenomenal as well. And but it led right into that new NBC show, Game of Silence. That was pretty good last night. I enjoyed that little kind of a thriller and all that good stuff. So I enjoyed the new show, and I didn't even hear about it until I just let myself lazily not punch a button at 10 o'clock last night and go. It's just easier that way, Tony. Just sure. Go with the flow. All right, so today we'll talk. We got the list of 25 players that are invited to the draft, and we'll try to parse through that list and what that means and what kind of implications it could have for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Pro Football Focus put out an article saying the Jags should draft Miles Jack. Guess what? We agree. You know what? Give us the opportunity, please. We'd like
to
draft
that. Miles Jack.
And now you've got some speculation out there that the Cleveland Browns may be looking to trade out of the second spot in the draft. We'll get into that coming up as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. Fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships is this. Once again, rank the top five defensive players in Jaguars team history. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Tyler. You got the Jaguars Today Facebook page. You've got the text line at 641-1010, driven by Duval Ford. That's also the call-in line. You can participate in the program in any manner of those ways coming up today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Rasheen Mathis, one of the great Jaguars of all time, retiring today. Who are your top five defensive players? We'll discuss throughout the next 2 hours. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I have a feeling we get Pearl Jam all day on Jaguars Today.
It's fine by me.
And I'm all right with that, Tony. That's absolutely fine by me. I know you're not a big NBA fan. You might not be an NBA fan at all, right? But you're a sports fan, fan of history and all that stuff. So you have two options tonight. Now, they're both being played on one's on ESPN, one's on ESPN2. But if you can only watch one or only attend one as a sports fan, would you attend Kobe's final game against Utah Jazz? Lakers, terrible team, not going anywhere, but it is the final time you can see Kobe Bryant. Or would you go see Golden State trying to knock off Memphis for their league-best 73rd win, league-record 73rd win?
If the Lakers would promise me but that nobody but Kobe's going to get up a shot tonight...
That might happen.
I would probably say I'll go watch the Lakers.
How many do you think Kobe
let
can
him
score?
Chase 100,
how many
right?
could Kobe score tonight if they really just try to let him score? I don't think he could get 100.
I don't think he could either.
I don't think he could get 81
let him
like
go.
He did.
Yeah,
I
let
think
him
he could
go.
Get 50. He could probably get 50. Tonight, and they may in fact do that tonight. You know, we'll see how that all plays out.
Can he get a moment that is as cool as it was for even people who hate the Yankees watching Derek Jeter walk off the way he did?
It's pretty good.
Literally with a walk off. I mean, it was unreal. And then going back out there to stand at shortstop one last time.
He need to hit a game winner tonight.
Yeah,
right? Basically,
you need the ball in his hands with 2 seconds and down two.
Right. The last possession, clear out for Kobe and let him go one-on-one, which he did quite a bit in his career. But, hey, the guy won five championships. Great scorer. I heard the guys discussing it on ETN this morning. He's probably somewhere in that range around the 10th best player of all time, something like that. And it is difficult, like Jeff pointed out, to compare Kobe Bryant to Wilt Chamberlain. You know, just completely
sure.
different.
They're
things.
Not asked to do the same thing. It's a completely different era.
Yet we talk about, you know, I think what it comes down to is dominance, right? Because we talk about, is Jerry Rice the best player in football? The reason we tend to give him a lot of consideration for the best player in history is the fact that he so dominates everyone else at his position, right? Statistically, much like when we're talking about today with the Jaguars' all-time best defensive players, Rasheen Mathis dominates the defensive backs, particularly the cornerbacks, statistically, and yeah. what he was able to
accomplish.
Are
those both late tonight? Are those both 10:30 tips?
My guess is correct. Yeah, because yep. Golden State's at home, right? Yeah, both of those 10:30 tips. Thank you, Tyler.
So that'll be after the Braves game. So, yeah, I may watch some of it.
Yeah, I'd be more interested in watching Kobe. It's his final game, right? You're going to get to see Golden State play again in a week, right? And whether they win 73 or not, they're a great team. You know, are they any better or worse if they win tonight's game or don't win tonight's game?
Historic, but
right, it's just yeah. it'll go down to the record book as a line, but it could be broken, right? Kobe, this is the last time you get to see Kobe Bryant. I think no question, if I was going to be in attendance for one, I'd rather be at Kobe's game. Just putting aside any personal feelings you might have about Kobe, I'm just talking about, you know, compartmentalizing as an athlete. I did enjoy this one that we got in from the real MBB, Matthew on Twitter already, ranking his top five defensive players. He went with 1, Tony Brackens, 2, Marcus Stroud, 2A, John Henderson. Usually that leads you to 4 being the next guy, but he went with 3 being Daryl Smith, because he's squeezing 6 in here.
Okay.
He went with Daryl Smith at 3, Kevin Hardy at 4, and Miles Jack.
Oh, nice.
5.
Miles Jack already making the list.
Matthew has seen the future, and it is Miles Jack, ladies and gentlemen.
By the way, with Kevin Hardy, who we haven't seen a whole lot of Kevin Hardy mentions yet, at least in the replies that I've seen, there's only 2 players in Jaguars history on the defensive side of the ball that have been a first-team All-Pro, and it's Rasheen Mathis and Kevin Hardy. They're the only 2 in the team's history that have ever been given that honor. So
either side of the ball.
On defensive side
defense,
of the ball.
Okay.
Offense, Tony Boselli made it 3 times.
I would think so.
Mojo made it once.
When he led the league in rushing.
Yeah, and I feel like they had 1 more guy on offense. Jimmy may have done it once.
Yeah, Jimmy had some pretty spectacular seasons individually. You know, I doubt it was Fred, because Fred only made the 1 Pro Bowl, and that was later in his career. Not that he didn't put up big numbers.
It was Brian Barker, the only other first-team All-Pro they've ever had.
Where did I see Brian? Oh, at the Coughlin J-Fun wine tasting thing. See Brian there every year. He's in great shape, looking good. Hope you're doing well out there, Brian, if you're listening. Tony, Lance Zierlein writes for NFL.com, mm-hmm. and he's getting a reputation of being a, you know, up-and-coming NFL insider type, right? Good
sure.
information man type guy. And he's been around for a little bit of time now. He tweeted out yesterday, let's see if I can find the specific tweet. Here it is. He said, quote, "There's more and more smoke around Cleveland being willing to deal the second pick and draft a quarterback in the second round. Something big will happen inside the top 5. End quote. That was the tweet from Lance Zierlein yesterday. Now, I will counter this by saying that Lance Zierlein, take everything with a grain of salt, because there's an article at NFL.com that Lance Zierlein was in charge of ranking the team needs for every team, and it was updated yesterday. So this is not something that got outdated with free agent signings or anything. This is an updated ranking.
Yeah, I saw it last week, and probably couldn't have disagreed more.
Top 5 needs for the Jags, off the top of your head, no particular order, would include what going into the draft?
Defensive end, outside linebacker, maybe interior offensive line, cornerback.
Corner.
And 5th, I don't
right, and it depends
know.
On how you want to yeah. split things up, right? You could even say middle
maybe,
linebacker.
Yeah, maybe middle linebacker.
To me,
I
would say linebacker. You need help in the linebacker core. I know that's not a specific position. He ranked the top 5 needs for the Jags as outside linebacker. Okay, that's fine.
Yep.
Defensive tackle.
What?
Number 2. Really? I mean, I'm considering Malik Jackson a defensive tackle for the purposes of this conversation. And he is as well, by the way, I believe. So defensive tackle. Then he ranks safety? 3rd? Safety?
Safety.
Is 3rd? I mean, look, Cyprian hasn't played well, up at least up to his draft status, but they barely got a look at James Sample last year. And they drafted him to come in and compete for a starting job last year. He's certainly going to have that opportunity this year. You just signed Tashawn Gibson. It's like, are these even factored in? But he even writes about some of the guys that were signed, so he's well aware of them. And then he lists offensive guard and center. I would argue that they're not both positions of need.
You no, it's one or the other.
Right. If you get a center, well, you've got your two starting guards set. If you get a starting caliber guard, then you're probably going to play Brandon Linder at center. That's the likely option as things stand right now. So if you play Linder at center and you play Cann at one guard spot, well, maybe Shatley, maybe Jokel, maybe Beecham, right? Maybe who's the new guy? Tanner
Hawkins. Bernadeau.
You got Bernadeau. Hawkinson, was that his name? I apologize if I'm getting that one wrong. There are a lot of candidates, put it that way, to potentially play that other guard spot. Doesn't mean they can't upgrade it, but I don't think they're super thin right now on options on the interior. So I wouldn't necessarily rank guard. I can see center if you're not convinced that Linder could play there. But anyway, so take it with a grain of salt. But he talks about Cleveland wanting to trade out of the number two spot. And the two, by the way, just because he doesn't get the Jags draft needs the way we see them doesn't mean his information is wrong on Cleveland being willing to trade out of the spot. Tony, it seems to me like Tennessee is doing everything to convince us that they are willing and able and have offers coming their way to trade out of that top spot as well.
Certainly.
I think they're trying to cook up a market for that top spot. We are sitting here and with our hopes on Miles Jack or Jalen Ramsey, likely, you know, Ramsey won't be there, but one of those two, possibly Bosa as a fallback, and we feel like if at least one quarterback goes in the top four, you're in pretty good position to see that come about. And maybe that'll be the case. Maybe whether it's Tennessee or Cleveland or Philadelphia or San Francisco or somebody trading up there, maybe we'll see exactly that. But, man, the possibility does exist that Tennessee doesn't get the blow them away offer. They just take Tunsil at that top spot. Nobody trades into there. Cleveland, if they are content, that they're like, look, we got Robert Griffin III. We're nowhere close to contending. None of these guys really does it for us in terms of a surefire can't-miss guy. And even if they did, we don't have much of a – you know, a roster around them to help them out. Let's say they go with a Bosa or a Miles Jack or whomever they go with in that spot. And, now all of a sudden you're looking up Jalen Ramsey. Would he go to San Diego? Quite possibly. Mm-hmm. At number three, he's been said to be the number one guy on Dallas's board as well. You could have that nightmare scenario crop up where, you know, at least none of your first couple of choices among defensive players are gone, and maybe the top three are all off the board at that point.
No, and it feels like a nightmare from this end of it because of how much we've talked about those three guys. We don't know if inside the building they'd be completely comfortable
with
whoever the player is that would be available to them in that kind of scenario. And the other question is, if Cleveland is moving out of that spot, the assumption would be that it's somebody that wants to get up where Cleveland is so that they can go get a quarterback, because Cleveland's comfortable taking whatever other quarterback may be available to him in the first round or whoever is available to him at the top of the second round. But it could be something else. It could be that a team really does feel like Jalen Ramsey is the player on defense in this draft and needs to get the two to feel like they can get him.
Right, get ahead of San Diego and Dallas.
Right, whoever that might be, or that it's Bosa or Jack or one of these guys that we've been talking about a lot. And if someone moves up to do that and it doesn't, if it's not San Diego or Dallas, right, that are making that move of one or two spots to get up to that kind of spot to draft that guy, if it's a team that doesn't want to get a quarterback that moves ahead of the Jaguars in that pecking order, well, it certainly doesn't feel like San Diego and Dallas are seriously considering quarterback at this point. So that's where that scenario comes in for me, too, is that if someone is moving up there because they feel like Ramsey is the guy in this draft and they move beyond the Jags at five, which I don't know who that would be. It certainly doesn't seem like something Baltimore would do because it's just not the MO with Ozzie Newsome. He likes to let the draft come to him. He doesn't like to take it to the draft. So you wouldn't think it would be them, but they could certainly be a team that you would think they may feel like they need to go get the piece.
Oh, let me tell you what. I got a lot of friends on Sirius who are Ravens fans because they work in the D.C. area. They are coveting Jalen Ramsey in a big way.
I'm sure
at least
they are.
The fan base is. They think he's a perfect fit for them. Now, they did sign Eric Weddle this offseason, but maybe that's more of a short-term stopgap. You're right. I, look, It's not a lock that if somebody trades in there, it's for a quarterback. Likely, probably. But I just think there's a lot of work being done to drum up the perception of a market out there for those picks, which leads me to believe that maybe it isn't as strong a market as
sure.
they'd have us like it to be. And therefore, we're going to see a lot of these usual suspects that we're hoping to slide to five come off the board in the
right.
first four.
Look, usually whatever you think the top five in a draft is going to be 2 weeks out, it's not going to look like that. Like, when everything is said and done, it's not going to look like that. I still think it's the most likely thing to happen at this point is that Tennessee's going to have the number one overall pick and take Laremy Tunsil.
I agree.
That still feels like the most likely thing to happen. But if it doesn't happen that way with Tennessee at one, then everything starts slipping around a little bit if you're the Jags at five. It's not like it was, you know, last year when they were at three and everyone kind of knew one and two were going to be quarterbacks. This is a different scenario for the Jags. If they really do covet one of those three players, they could potentially be put in a position where they're either going to have to move to get one of those three players or be comfortable with what's left to them.
No doubt. All right. We will continue to discuss, obviously, now as we approach the NFL draft coming up 15 days away. And your question of the day posed to you is, who are the top five defensive players in Jaguar team history? Brian Sexton, longtime voice of the Jags, has been with the organization since day one. We'll share his thoughts on that very subject coming up next. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Looking back on this 13-year career that you've had in the NFL, what moments stick out to you as some of your favorite memories?
Well, first off is getting drafted. Being at Disney with my family and my friends, being drafted to the Jaguars, getting that call before it happened and knowing that I was coming home, that was the icing on the cake pretty much before I even got the cake, I guess. But that was a blessing. And to share it with my family for 10 years was amazing. And I guess some of the things that stick out is Pittsburgh. You know, being here in Jacksonville, the Lord has allowed me to create some great memories. And it was a playoff game in Pittsburgh that all the fans always remind me of it. So it's hard to kind of forget that. A couple of interceptions for a touchdown to win a playoff game in Pittsburgh.
Ben Barchop, who signals and calls for the waist-high snap. He's got it. Jaguars rushing four. He's got time, and it's intercepted. Mathis has got it. He's going back the other way at the 40-yard line. Looking for a block. He's got it. Rasheem Devon. 10. 5, touchdown! Touchdown, Rasheem Mathis!
Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Oh, I got to get a picture of Fortunato now and tweet it out. Joey Donuts came in. Do we have Brian's on over here?
The thing is, Fortunato's wearing the 27 jersey, which is the number that Mathis wore, except if you look at the back of his jersey there, it says Fortunato.
We'll get him a shot from the front then, because that is... That's a disappointment is what that is. 2007 was such a fun time for this Jaguar organization, and maybe we wouldn't cling to it so much if they had made some more memories between then and now, Brian, but it had to be a great time for you.
It was fun.
Just calling those games, and to go into Pittsburgh and be the only team to beat them twice in Pittsburgh in a season was a remarkable
feat. And that was no slouch Pittsburgh team. I mean, you had Ben Roethlisberger, Santonio Holmes, you had the tight end. Why can't I think of his name?
Heath Miller.
Yeah, Heath Miller. I mean, you had a talented team, and this Jacksonville team was defense and run the ball, and David Garrard played really smart all season long because it wasn't like he had big receivers that he was chucking the ball down, game-breaking receivers.
Right.
But he threw 23 touchdowns and just a handful of interceptions. It was one of those years where everything came together. Give a lot of credit to Dirk Cutter. He got one of the best seasons in Jaguars offensive history from a quarterback that nobody expected to come out and play that well in a heck of a ground game.
He sure did, and Rasheem Mathis making some highlight reel plays.
He owned Pittsburgh.
He really did, and that is, to me, you envisioned that, the Garrard run, certainly in the playoff game, to pick up the first down.
The back-to-back interceptions.
The huge.
Back-to-back drives, one goes for the touchdown. Really, I mean, it just put the stake in the heart of the Steelers. They realized that didn't matter how many plays they made, the Jaguars had one more all day long. And they had a ton of confidence going into that ball game because they had won there just a few weeks earlier. And so, you know, Mathis is such a great story. Grew up in Jacksonville, knew the great Jaguar-Steelers rivalry of the 90s, and then came here and owned the Steelers as part of the Jaguars. He appreciates it as much as anyone.
And I appreciate the opportunity to work with a guy like that because he was always, and to this day, remains a classy guy. But always, you know, guys that when it doesn't go well for them, you don't see them in the locker room. You don't even see them in there. They clear out of there before the media comes in. Rasheen Mathis would stand there and he would do 10 minutes with everyone in there individually if they asked that of him. He would do anything that you needed. He would answer. He would fall on his sword if he made mistakes. He would stand there and talk about a loss. He would certainly talk about a win and what it meant to be a team leader and all those things. And always was one of my go-to guys in the locker room.
He and Puzlusny and Alan Hearns. I mean, the guys that you know, especially you know, the last 4 or 5 years where it's been more losing, boy, those are the guys that give you insight. Rasheen Mathis is a local kid. Everyone's proud of him. But the man that he is and the type of player that he is and his commitment to the community was off the charts.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the Clara White mission, the YMCA, the junior achievement, whatever they asked him to do, he was always out front. And he was a star player for this franchise. You can always get the long snapper on a Tuesday and the punter to go somewhere and read to kids or serve in a food kitchen. But to get the star cornerback, that Rasheen was always out on Tuesday.
He grew up here and it showed, right? And he gave back. Yeah. And what a dream scenario for him. I hope he feels it played out that way. You heard some of his comments right there. The chance to play high school football here, play college football really right down the road where his family could see him, I'm sure, quite frequently, and then get drafted in the second round and play for a long, long time and very well for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tony and I discuss it. You know, towards the end of his career, he was much maligned, Rasheen Mathis, well, right?
He had some nagging injuries, too, now.
He had some nagging injuries, and, Brian, I was always told that he, a lot of covering up for Reggie Nelson's missteps on the back line, made a lot of cornerbacks look bad on this football team.
You bet, and he was a guy that could take care of his area and could help Reggie and cover up some areas as well. So, I mean, normally you're asking that safety to go over the top and help the corner, but you had a corner who could do his own job and help the safety.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't mean to malign Reggie Nelson, but the fact of the matter is that Rasheen Mathis was a guy who could do a lot of different things.
Reggie has done okay for himself. Reggie was probably miscast in the way they wanted him to play here, and he did grow up, things more seriously, and he's played very well, played great this past season, most interceptions in the league for any safety this year. We asked you a couple days ago, give you a little heads up,
yep,
that we would be talking about the great defensive players in team history, and I didn't think of anyone better to talk about this than with you because you've seen them all.
Sure.
So give appreciate them to five through one, whatever your criteria
I'll give you five
is.
Five through one, but
yeah,
it's the two honorable mentions that I think people won't be thinking of.
Okay.
I'm gonna give you. So five is Paul Puzlusny, and I debated this with Daryl Smith because Daryl was terrific, but Daryl had the two big guys up front, Stroud and Henderson. He had Mike Pete in the middle. He had Rasheen back there. He had a lot more talent around him than Paul Puzlusny has had. Now, they built it around Puz, but I developed a great appreciation for Puz last year in Tampa. That was the game he did not play. They threw the rookie from Miami in there, and a rookie quarterback from Florida State and Dirk Cutter just turned him inside out. Puzlusny is so smart, and he is such a sideline-to-sideline tackler. I know people don't see him that way, but I spent the year on the sidelines, and I watched, and the guy is all over the place. So Puzlusny is number five, an appreciation for one of the great tacklers in the game. Number four is Kevin Hardy. And, you know, Hardy, you'd think, well, he belongs there. He was the number two overall pick. First game against Pittsburgh, right? The defending AFC champions come in here on an insanely hot day in 1996, and he has a sack and an interception. And I think I told you guys the last time I was in, I've been doing a lot of archive projects with some of the old video. And you turn on the video of the defense back then that day, and Kevin was a tackler, a thumper, a guy who got up in the hole. We don't always think of him as that because you had Brian Schwartz and Tom McManus in the middle, and you had Eddie Robinson who was in the middle for a time, and those guys always made those big thumping tackles. Man, Kevin Hardy was in on a lot of tackles. And tackles, as you guys know, not an official statistic.
Sure.
So they are measured by the coach in the room on Monday morning. But, man, Kevin made a lot of tackles, had 10.5 sacks in that 99 season.
One of the few that's had double-digit sacks here.
Absolutely, and was a really productive guy. Tweaked his knee in 2000 in Dallas and just never really was the same, but was a big guy and a guy who could run and make a lot of hits. So he's four. Three with Marcus Stroud.
Okay.
Three-time Pro Bowler. I mean, I think that says a lot. He didn't get on the field in 2001. It was a terrific disappointment, you know, top pick. Didn't get on the field because Gary Walker was playing so well. And he couldn't beat Gary Walker out. And so people thought he might have been a bust. But from 02 through the middle of 07, let's just say 06, because 07 he was hurt and he got in Jack Del Rio's doghouse. People forget he wasn't even around when this team made their playoff run. Marcus Stroud was not on the field when they were playing late in the season. Wasn't on the field for either of those Pittsburgh games. But boy, could he run sideline to sideline. He could stand a guy up and shed him, was a forced up the middle, and could, how many times did log him and say, hey, watch this, and run the tape back and forth, and all you saw was Marcus Stroud racing from the backside to make the play up the field. Just a gifted big man, and as good a defensive tackle in the AFC and maybe the NFL over that time span as you could ask for. Number two is Rasheem. 30 interceptions. He blocked field goals, blocked punts. You know, we talked about what he did. So I would put him as number two. And number one is Tony Brackens. And not because of the sack number, but because every time I've been going through the tape and I've been through all those seasons, he just makes play after play, and a tackle doesn't describe the things he does. The force with which he drove John Ogden back so that he could tip a ball that Tony Banks was trying to get out into the flat to a wide-open running back. Racing from the backside to make a play and drop the quarterback at the line of scrimmage. Plus, Seattle here in a key game against the Seahawks on a Sunday night in 1996, two interceptions, one back for a touchdown. He did it in Baltimore 99. He was a human highlight machine and the best defender we've ever had. And Baselli and Loggeman, I feel confident, would echo that, because they will both tell you they never saw anybody on the other side of the field that was as good as Tony Brackens. He wasn't a live, breathe football guy.
So his peak just beat out the longevity of some other guys, probably.
Well, that's true. And, you know, he had the knee. He had the microfracture. And so, you know, the last two or three years of his career, he was really struggling to stay on the field. But he didn't love football. He played it. He took the check, and he did well with his money. But those guys will always tell
you. What a ranch, didn't he, I think?
A ranch, and his parents have a gospel quartet. And, I mean, hey, look, Tony Brackens, who cares whether he loved football from his perspective? He made a lot of money, and he's living the life.
Right, and he played it very well. You didn't feel cheated that he just took your money and didn't give you the full effort.
He could have been one of the all-time greats. All right, you ready for the two honorable mentions?
Yes.
They're right outside it. Number one of the honorable mention is Clyde Simmons. He was only here 2 years, and everybody remembers the play that he made in Buffalo that turned that playoff game around. But when you watch the tape, there were more plays he made on third and short where he had a sack at the line of scrimmage to force a punt that turned the game around, right, that gave the ball back to Mark and Jimmy and Keenan, and they'd either win the game or start turning the game around. It was just play after play after play after play. And he always, I had a lot of sideline shots, always with Tony Brackens, always trying to maximize him. He was a terrific player, and people forget. They just remember that one play because he didn't pile up multiple sacks. But boy, did he make plays. He was an impact defender of the highest order. And the other's Aaron Beasley. You know, Beasley had six interceptions and he had in one season, and he had a bunch of, you know, fumble recoveries and had a couple of touchdowns. But man, did he make plays in the flat. I mean, he broke up passes and made tackles. And we don't think of Aaron Beasley as being this high-end corner, but for a time in this defense, he was as dependable a corner who made more big plays at the right moment than we remember. Now, not Rasheem Mathis, but Beasley made a lot of big plays. It just, they get lost.
John Henderson doesn't crack the top seven then for you.
No. You know, John was a one-dimensional player. Now, he was powerful. He kicked Alan Faneca's butt. And Faneca was the best guard in the AFC at times. He could be dominant. He'd maybe be eight, but I like Gary Walker better.
Do you? Wow.
Gary Walker, remember, Gary Walker, 99, had 10.5 sacks.
He was an excellent player.
And he was a dominant. I mean, when he got his hands on you, you didn't move. He could play three gap, just like everyone said, that John could play zero and a gap on either side. Gary Walker could do the same thing, but he had a pass rush. So I'd probably put Gary Walker a little higher. And that's saying something, because I really didn't like Gary Walker, the person. I hated dealing with him. But, man, could he play.
All right, so you had Brackens 1, Mathis 2, Stroud, Hardy, and Puzlesny, the official Brian Sexton top five.
Yeah, I got
to slash Daryl Smith,
yeah,
the two of them.
Yeah, slash Daryl
Smith. Kind of on the same line.
Yeah, they're the same guy.
So then we have, like, 12 guys in Brian's top seven here,
it's
Tony.
It's hard.
It's all right.
When you've been around as long as I have and you knew these guys personally, it's tough to leave them off the list.
I understand. I mean, that the linebacker debate is a great one, though. I think Hardy and Smith, and you can even throw Peterson into the conversation with Puzlesny.
The
four of them are you can debate around and around and around, depending on what you're looking for to your linebackers.
Where's Donovan Darius on that?
Donovan's probably saying that right now. Double D is Brian's list.
He was a big hitter, and he did it well. But, again, kind of like John Henderson, he was not a multidimensional play and coverage kind of
situation. You're saying he wasn't a lockdown cover guy.
I'm saying there were a couple of plays I remember in Baltimore and Charlotte where he could have won the game if he held onto the ball. You want to run stuffer, tackling safety? He was excellent. He's probably, you know, 9 or 10 on my list.
All right, I got
terrific player.
Brian Sexton, terrific broadcaster. Love it, buddy. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
There he goes, Brian Sexton, longtime voice of your Jacksonville Jaguars, weighing in with his top five today. What about yours? Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Tyler. That is the Tom Bush question of the day, your top five defenders in team history for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A Metro Rooter Wednesday continues in a moment with this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
Okay, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in football history, April 13, 2016, Rasheen Mathis signed a one-day contract. Wait, that hasn't happened yet. It will happen later today.
Will happen.
Sign a one-day contract and retire as a Jacksonville Jaguar. We will celebrate the one-year anniversary next April 13th. Tony, birthdays on this date, Ted Washington, the big, massive, mammoth mountain of a man. I threw as many alliterative M's in there as I could. Mm-hmm. Four-time Pro Bowler, born on this date in 1968. He turns, what would that make it, 48 years old today. Eddie Robinson, former Jaguar linebacker for a couple of seasons, turns 46 years old today. Dan Campbell played 10 years in the league with the Giants, the Cowboys, and Detroit. And, of course, he was the interim coach for Miami last year, mm-hmm. went 5-7 in his 12 games as the head coach of the Dolphins. Born in this date in 1976, so he's only 40 years old. Happy birthday to Johnny Manziel's roommate. Or
maybe.
Or is he? I don't know if he is or not. How many guesses do you need, Tony, to accurately predict what Josh Gordon will do to celebrate his birthday today?
After the failed drug test?
I forgot. What
I don't
was
know.
The question?
We'll see.
25 years young for Josh Gordon.
Well, if he's rooming with Johnny, it'll be, how many nights have we been out here, bro?
Hey, bro, you see me every week, every day, 5-6 nights in a row.
What have we been doing?
Just hanging out, chilling. That's not I mean, nothing wrong with partying.
Yeah,
I'm drunk.
And not drunk. The way you say I'm drunk. Josh Gordon born on this date, Tony. Also, Melvin Gordon was born on this date.
That's crazy.
2 years later. Who will score an NFL touchdown first? Josh Gordon, will he get back in the league and score? Because Melvin Gordon had exactly zero last year.
I would say Melvin Gordon.
I would think so, but Josh Gordon now does have an August 1st date where he can reapply for admission, which shows that the NFL at least is open to him potentially coming back this year. I wouldn't count on it, but he's probably a safer bet, although Melvin, no sure thing. Certainly, he turns 23 years old today. That's this date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need a family dentist or cosmetic work done, or both perhaps, whatever you're in the market for, 620-9225 for all your dental needs. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
An NFL spokesman confirmed a story we talked about at length yesterday. Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon's reinstatement has indeed been denied because of a failed drug test. Spokesman said that Gordon can apply for reinstatement on August 1st, which would be right around the beginning of training camp for the Browns. Details regarding the events leading up to the shooting death of former New Orleans Saints defensive end Will Smith this weekend continue to emerge. Good Morning America showed surveillance footage, which shows that Cardell Hayes was involved in a hit-and-run with a vehicle that appears to be Will Smith's before the shooting. Hayes, according to his attorney, followed the car that hit him and was attempting to call 911 when the three-car accident that led to some sort of confrontation occurred. Police have also confirmed that they found a fully loaded 9mm handgun in Smith's car, but there was no evidence that it had been fired. It is unclear whether Smith ever wielded that weapon during the confrontation, though there is talk of at least one witness who says Smith did pull out the weapon during the confrontation before the shooting, and Hayes' defense attorney has not made it clear yet whether they are going to claim it was self-defense in the incident. The preliminary hearing is scheduled for April 28th. The Tampa Bay Times reported yesterday that Bucs coaches are pleased with Jameis Winston because he's down to 230 pounds and falling. Jameis Winston, the number one overall pick in last year's draft, weighed in at the combine at 231 pounds. but apparently ballooned up to 250 pounds during the offseason last year, down to 230 again as he's working out this offseason.
Yeah, he looked a little chunky last year. He did look good. I saw him with the conspicuously dark-eyebrowed Britt McHenry the other day on SportsCenter. And he looked like he was in better shape than he was his rookie season. It sounds like what they are setting up a self-defense claim in the shooting death of Will Smith. There was a passenger in the car, in the shooter's car, who claims, and he's not being charged with anything because he didn't do anything other than ride along there. But he claims that Smith hit him from behind, and then they pulled their car over to the side of the road, which was a Hummer, and Smith was driving, I think, a BMW, and didn't stop, just took off. So they pursued them to say, hey, buddy, you just hit us. We need to at least exchange insurance information. I'm sure it was just that civil. And the guy in the passenger seat claims that Will Smith may have brandished that weapon in the direction of the driver and passenger of the car, and that the driver acted in self-defense in shooting him, which may in fact be true. We don't know.
Don't know.
I mean, put it this way. Somebody points a gun at you, pulls a gun at you when they hit you, they take off, you follow them because you want to get their information to get their license number, whatever, and they stop and pull a gun on you. Are you justified in firing a weapon at them? I think you might be. I'm not saying definitively, but I think we need to see how this case plays out before we just say it's a case of road rage gone bad in the case of the guy who shot Will Smith. So I guess we'll see. Tony, article at NFL.com by Mark Sessler. He's the Around the NFL writer. This was updated just a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. He predicts, he ranks the rosters kind of in the AFC, okay? And he puts them in different categories. I'm going to give you the categories. I'm going to give you how many teams are in each category. I'm going to see if you can get the proper teams in the proper categories.
Can
I think
let me
you can
pull up a standing.
Yeah, do that. Because all you need to do is look at the teams that are in there. And the first category that you have in the AFC, and there are only two teams that occupy this slot, are the heavyweights. Who are the two biggest heavyweights in terms of contenders with their rosters in the AFC?
Well, definitely the Patriots.
Patriots are number one.
And because of the losses for Denver, I'm going to say they're not going to put them there. I'll go Pittsburgh.
You are correct, sir. I think you're going to do quite well at this right now. Then you've got a group of eight teams that are deemed, quote, playoff ready. Okay, that serious contenders, I suppose, for the playoffs, however you want to look at it. Which eight teams would you place in that category?
Denver, Kansas City.
Both in there.
Houston, Indianapolis.
Both in there.
Cincinnati.
Yes. Three others.
Three more. They put Oakland in that class?
They did put Oakland in that class.
It's not going to be...
Two more.
Either of those. No.
You have the Bengals, Chiefs, Broncos, Raiders, Texans, and Colts.
Baltimore?
Baltimore is who they selected, or who he selected. And one more.
One more out of the East, I think. The Jets.
That clean sweep. Nicely done. Bengals, Chiefs, Broncos, Ravens, Raiders, Texans, Jets, Colts.
That's
in that order.
Job.
Is how they rank the quote-unquote playoff-ready teams.
Okay.
Then there is a category of one team. That is, the category is ready to make the leap, ? Dot.
Ready to make the leap. I mean, it's not Oakland, so the only other team it could be is Jacksonville.
Jacksonville Jaguars, baby! Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars boast a talented offense and new faces on defense and tackle, Malik Jackson, cover man Principal Kamara, and safety Tashaun Gibson. General manager Dave Caldwell has set the table for a breakthrough season. Now it's up to coach Gus Bradley to see it through. And then they had five teams lagging behind. Those would be the Bills, Chargers, Dolphins, Titans, and Browns. So at least by this metric, you are seen as better than those five into the season and perhaps ready to make the leap to playoff contender status here. Nicely done. I knew you would do well in that particular dealie right there. You know, I made the comment earlier that free safety is fixed, and I had the question on the text line driven by Duval Ford, is it really fixed? And somebody cited Pro Football Focus's ranking of Tayshaun Gibson last year, which was not very good among safeties. And keep in mind, as you heard at his introductory press conference, he played hurt last year, and that, he said, really impacted his ability to do what he was able to do in prior seasons, particularly the year before where he made the Pro Bowl. So they believe they're getting a player that, when healthy, is closer to the 2014 version, the Pro Bowler of Tayshaun Gibson, as opposed to last year's version who fell off due, they believe, in large part to injury that he had to play through. So, look, I'll put it this way. You go out and sign Tayshaun Gibson to the contract you signed him to. He walks in. He's your free safety. It better be fixed. You didn't sign a guy who's 33 years old hoping to squeeze a season or two out of him. You signed a guy who's in his mid-20s that you think is the answer at that position, a former Pro Bowler. If it's not fixed, then they missed. But I've got to believe the approach is, hey, we fix free safety. Now, that doesn't mean they couldn't draft Jalen Ramsey because you can play him at corner.
Sure.
You know, and you end up, you play five DBs a good percentage of the time. You're going to put your five, find a way to get your five best DBs on the field in those circumstances. And you would figure Gibson and Ramsey would both, they'd find room to play both of those guys.
Sure. Look, Tayshaun Gibson has 14 career interceptions. Do we have to go back to accumulating every interception the Jags have? Do we have to go back to the 2013 season before we get 14 interceptions out
possibly
of the roster?
And historically, Rasheen Mathis, Aaron Beasley, anybody else topping those 14?
Right.
I mean, he would rank third all time in Jaguar history?
Something like that.
And he's 26, I believe.
Look, and I get it, and that may be the person texting there, maybe someone who just really wants to see Jalen Ramsey in a Jaguars jersey. So the idea of anyone saying that they're set at any of the defensive back positions that Jalen Ramsey could potentially play maybe bugs them a little bit. They paid the money they did to Tayshaun Gibson because they felt like he is a major, major upgrade for them at a position they've been trying to fix for 3 years. And they probably feel like they're not going to be able to get Jalen Ramsey at five based on everything that we're hearing. And maybe the evaluation that they have of him is that he's the number one or two player in this draft. And they're like, one or two is probably not getting to us because someone else has to see what we're seeing out of this particular player. Because it's not like a Blake Bortles, right, where it was basically Houston or Jacksonville maybe were seriously considering Blake Bortles in that draft. Houston decided to go with Jadeveon Clowney, who was being talked about as a once-in-a-generation type defensive end talent coming out of South Carolina. He's been injured, and they decided not to pull the trigger on Blake Bortles. It worked out for Jacksonville. We're talking about Jalen Ramsey here, where it feels like this guy's not sneaking up on anybody. This is one of the top talents in this draft, and everybody knows it. And the Jags probably feel like they're not going to be able to draft him, even if they wanted him to play free safety in Jacksonville. And I don't see Ramsey being the guy that if the Jags are going to make a move in this draft, I don't think it's to go up and get Jalen Ramsey because it feels like they've addressed the position that it sounds like Dave Caldwell would rather him play, which is free safety. At least in Jacksonville, feels like they want him to be a safety in Jacksonville if they're going to.
And I think a lot of the analysts feel he'd be better suited to play free safety in the National Football League as well. And good analysis there. A couple questions on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Why does Josh Gordon seem to get more chances than Justin Blackmon got? What chances is he getting? He hasn't been reinstated. In fact, he got suspended for a year most recently for drinking a beer. Not for another positive test. It was a violation of the terms of his probation, we'll call it. It wasn't really legal probation. It was NFL probation. But
sure.
The drug
policy.
And it's
still unclear whether or not Blackman's ever reapplied.
Right. Has he ever applied for reinstatement? He's never shown any indication that he wants to go that direction. Josh Gordon has applied for reinstatement, so it gets evaluated, and he didn't get to come back in the league, and he will get looked at again in August. He's not getting any more chances than Justin Blackmon is. He's taking advantage of the opportunity to apply for reinstatement, but so far he's been turned down.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, he's missed a lot of time since his breakout season. And then somebody passed along, thought Will Smith was shot in the back. That may be the case. I think, as a matter of fact, I did hear.
That was the initial report.
Right. And I don't know all the details of it. I'm not claiming the guy shot him in self-defense. I'm saying this is the defense. And the fact that Will Smith hit him and took off and had a loaded gun in the car, it just may not be as clean cut as we were led to believe. Oh, it's a road rage incident. There was a fender bender, and this guy got out of control. Maybe it turns out to be that. maybe it doesn't. Not always as simple as the first reporting indicates.
No. And it's only getting more complicated by the day, because the initial report was it's a road rage incident where Will Smith got shot. Then you learn about the lawsuit and the cop and everything else that was going on. Then the hit and run before all this other stuff, and a witness that says Will Smith may have brandished that gun. If he got shot in the back, he got shot in the back. I'm not sure about the details of that. And how did the wife get shot? I'm still curious about that in the vehicle.
Right. All right. Got to break this one in. You guys know Ramsey is not going to be there. Why does everyone keep saying Ramsey? He's not lasting till the fifth pick. What do you mean? Why does everyone keep saying Ramsey? Everyone who says Ramsey says he's not going to make it till the fifth pick, but he's in the discussion because you don't know 100%. No. You can't know. You can believe that, and you might be right, but you can't know it because you're not inside the mind of those other general managers, bottom line. Why does that bother you so much? I don't understand. All right, we got a break. We'll come back. Who did get invited to New York for the NFL, or Chicago, excuse me, for the NFL draft? I did, but I'm not one of the 25 players who's going to be in the green room. We'll tell you who is, and we'll discuss the potential Jaguars coming up next. It's Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Pearl Jam tonight. Power Devin, you're not going to Pearl Jam, are you?
I'm not going, but there is a rumor going around that Pearl Jam will tour with the Foo Fighters next year, and I cannot miss that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a big Foo Fighters fan.
More so than Pearl Jam, obviously.
I'd say so.
Pearl Jam by themselves wasn't enough to get you to go.
I honestly did not even know Pearl Jam was here until I heard Beef talking about it earlier this week. So,
yeah, I knew they were coming, and honestly, I didn't know either. I live in my little bubble, and if Pearl Jam didn't happen across the seventh fairway when I was teeing off, I may not have noticed that they were around these days. So, you know, love them, though. They're very good.
It's a possibility Eddie Vedder is listening to us right now.
What's up, Ed?
What up, Eddie?
The hell's Yellow Ledbetter all about? Huh? Just don't understand the words to that song. I suppose I could look up the real ones. I prefer the misheard lyrics.
I'm aware.
I've been singing them all every break. Keep going. On a wizard, on a way, Yale. All right. Moving along, Tony. The NFL official list of draft invitees was put out yesterday. 25 players from 15 teams. Ohio State has five invitees, and Von Bell not among them. A couple that jumped out at me on this list: Keanu Neal out of Florida is invited among the top 25 players, and you know, I just got one in on the text line. What do you think of Keanu Neal? I just don't understand why everyone thinks the Jags need to draft a safety that early. Again, if they draft Ramsey, I think it's in part because he's athletically too gifted to pass up, and you got the positional flexibility to play him at cornerback for a while, which is a more valuable position typically, maybe with an eye on the long term. I don't know, you draft a safety in the first three rounds, where are you going to put him? You know, unless it is a guy like Ramsey, who is that what you feel that exceptional. I just don't think it's that big a need for the Jags, but he's certainly been climbing up boards, and to go from kind of fringe top 40 consideration now to being one of the 25 guys, at least, that accepted an invite. These are the draft attendees, so there may have been a few other players that got invites that did not get or did not accept them or chose to stay home, which sometimes the smart course of action. I think the only quarterbacks going are Wentz and Goff at this point in time. By the way, Jason Lock and Fora writing what several people have said. Maurice Jones-Drew told me he talked to Hugh Jackson at the Combine, and that Hugh Jackson seemed to indicate, the impression he got from Hugh Jackson was, man, I didn't come here to develop some quarterback from North Dakota State. It's going to take a while to get that guy up to speed.
So he trusts the small hands of Jared Goff in that cold weather?
Jones-Drew came away thinking that they, if they go quarterback with that pick, it will be Jared Goff. Pete Prisco's had Jared Goff, I believe, mocked there for his last several mock drafts. You still see more people say Carson Wentz is the pick there. This is the list in alphabetical order. Eli Apple. Tell me if you'd like to see, or which of these guys you think would be on the Jags' radar, either at the first pick or if they were to last to the second pick. Okay,
I think Apple would be if he's there in the second round.
Second round, yeah. Right? I think he would be as well. Joey Bosa, certainly, with the fifth pick. Vernon Butler, defensive tackle out of Louisiana Tech. Don't know much about Vernon Butler. I don't think Vernon Butler is on their radar in the first couple of rounds, is my guess.
Probably not.
Probably not. Corey Coleman, all the wide receivers I think we can leave off here. Corey Coleman from Baylor, Josh Doctson from TCU, and Laquon Treadwell, the only actual wide receivers who got invited. Will Fuller from Notre Dame, by the way, did not get invited. Among the more, you know, bigger names.
Sure. Any consideration, though, for the Jags? I know they're set at the wide receiver position as far as that depth chart 1-3 really is. It looks pretty solid. But, I mean, if a guy like Coleman slipped to him in the top of the second round, you know, or Doctson, where you have the opportunity, I've heard T-Wig talk about this on primetime a couple times, too, just the opportunity to not be really good at a position but potentially be great, be dominant at that kind of position. You play three wide receivers a lot anyway.
You do, but I think you're burying – I think you're – it's not the most advantageous. If this were a team like Cincinnati, right, that was in a cycle of making it to the playoffs every single year, and they drafted Cedric Ogbuehi out of Texas A&M last year knowing that they couldn't get him on the field, but when he does come up now, maybe that pushes – creates a logjam of players at his position. I don't think the Jags can afford to do something like that, quite frankly, because, that, look, at the very least, you want to get the ball in Rashad Green's hands. We saw that last year. I know a lot of people are soured on Marquise Lee, and I can understand why. I don't think the organization is writing off Marquise Lee. I just don't – I think it's way too much of a luxury for me to see them take
a wide receiver. For Jacksonville, you'd have to like one of those guys as kind of a mid-teens prospect. And
you'd
they
have
slip
to grade
to
him that. Yeah.
Right. And you're just sitting there, you're looking at a guy who maybe you have ranked as the 15th player in this draft as opposed to, okay, let's go get the guy that's 32 on our board. And I think if you're getting to that kind of point with value, maybe that supersedes whatever position they happen to play outside of quarterback.
You know, we talked about what happens if Laramie Tunsil slides to the Jags at number 5? No matter how unlikely it is, you know what, you have to be ready for these things in case they do happen, and that's why you rank these guys. What if a guy, Tony, slid to the second round that they really like a Jason Spriggs at Indiana? He is not, by the way, on the invitees list. He is working out for the Jets. The Jets could be going offensive tackle with the 20th selection in the first round, but he's... Put it this way, if you invited 30 guys, he might have been in that next 5-player group. If you get a guy like that, there are several offensive tackles that are expected to come off the board in the first round here. Jack Conklin out of Michigan State, Taylor Decker out of Ohio State, among them, in addition to Ronnie Stanley, certainly, and Tunsil at the top of the draft. If you got a guy who you really liked at O-tackle, wouldn't you consider him in the second round? I know we talk a lot about the interior, but... There are a lot of people, I think, thinking they've got things set at left tackle with Kelvin Beachum, who's coming off an ACL, and we don't really know what they've got in Kelvin Beachum, and they won't know until they get him on the field in the fall.
I suppose so. Like, the idea of drafting a left tackle is a bit more bothersome to me, maybe even than the wide receiver spot, just because, look, you can play 3 or 4 wide receivers. You got one guy that's playing left tackle.
Right, but you could play linemen inside, right? You could play tackles
inside. If they're comfortable
inside.
Doing that, but you have to evaluate that they're comfortable, that they can
Understood.
Be a guy that's effective doing
and,
that.
And maybe that's the case. If you've got a guy who is, like you were saying in the scenario where you've got a high grade on a wide receiver, and I still think it's very unlikely they take a wide receiver. Let's say
I think
you got
so too.
Let's say you have a top 20 grade and it's pick 38 and you're up. And you've got an offensive lineman there, and you think he's got the versatility. I think that's got to be something you consider. It's not necessarily a target, but I think it's something you consider. Who's on the line, Tyler? Tell me, is it Mike? We got Ryan in Cincinnati checking in. I did not see that. All right, 641-1010 is the number. Let's go to Ryan on Jaguars today. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good.
What are you doing in Cincinnati?
Man, I live up here. I've been a lifelong fan from afar.
All right. How did that happen? Just tell us how it happened. I'm always curious how people become Jaguar fans outside the market. How did that happen for you?
Honestly, and I think it was 98, my family and I, we went to, it was Jags Bengals at the old stadium here, and it was on Halloween, I believe. And I was already kind of a fan, but I mean, I was a young kid, and honestly, the Bengals sucked. And I think the Jags, I mean, they just completely whooped them. It was like a 30-35 point win. I mean, it was crazy. And so
34-17, yeah. The historians are telling me right now.
Okay. It felt bigger than that, but yeah, it was
I got you. I got you. All right. All right. Well, I was just curious. What's your take this morning? What's your point you wanted to make?
Honestly, I was just calling in honor of Rasheen. I had a really kind of funny story. So, back in 07, when we went to the playoffs, obviously it's Cincinnati, and there's a lot of, because Pittsburgh's only 5 hours away, there's a lot of local Steelers fans. And so a couple buddies of mine wanted to go to B-Dubs to watch the game. However, I was really hesitant because I didn't want to be around Steelers fans. And so I ended up, of course, you know, getting talked into it. And so when the opening of the game kicks off, and I think the Steelers went right down the field and scored. And the place was kind of completely quiet. However, when Mojo had the big kick return, I noticed a couple people were cheering. I'm like, okay, this isn't that bad. And then when Rasheen has the pick six, his first one, there was like legit cheering. And I was like, oh man, I'm like, okay, this isn't that bad. However, like, I think it was on the very next series. It was like 4 or 5 plays later. It was crazy. He had that second pick. And when he had that second pick, everybody in the place erupted. And people in Cincinnati were literally chanting Mathis. And, like, I looked around like I was astonished. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm with my people. And it was hysterical. Like, everybody in this entire Cincinnati Buffalo Wild Wings was losing their mind when Rasheen had that second pick. And I don't know where the Steelers fans were that night, but they weren't at the B-Dubs. And honestly, looking back, it's like one of my favorite memories. I mean, obviously there's a lot to choose from when it comes to Rasheen, but that game in particular is something I'll never forget. And it was hilarious.
Ryan, we appreciate it, man. I distinctly remember wondering where the Pittsburgh fans were about halfway through the third quarter as they were heading for the exits en masse. You know, they want to tell you they're a better class of fan than any other city in America. Look, you're all spread out all over the country because who doesn't want to escape Pittsburgh? I get it, okay? But they were flocking out of that stadium, Tony. They gave up on their team real early that year when the Jags came calling in Pittsburgh. And, I mean, just watching them go down the tunnels was a beautiful sight to behold.
Sure, that's a cool story, though, from up in Cincinnati.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
I'm sure whatever number of Steelers fans there may be in Cincinnati, there's a lot of Bengals fans up there as well. And I don't doubt that there's a pretty good portion of just that Steelers hate. Like, there is in most cities across the nation. There's a lot of Steelers fans everywhere, but there's also a lot of the anti-Steelers sentiment, none more so than in teams that have been in a division with the Pittsburgh Steelers, which qualifies in Jacksonville and Cincinnati, obviously, still to this day.
A lot of people who recognize and respect that remark, I did not want to be around Steelers fans. That's a common thought, I think, for most people in their day-to-day life, Ryan, so it makes perfect sense to me as well.
I love my mom and brother, despite the fact that they're Steelers
fans.
That's
family. That's a different story. Family trumps a lot. Not everything. Can't be a Red Sox fan, but for goodness sakes, it trumps most, all right? Blood is thicker than team allegiance in many cases, but not all. We know that. The Fan Feedback Spotlight today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, asked you to rank your top 5 defensive players in team history. We'll take a look at some of your submissions coming up here in a moment. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday for any size plumbing job, in-home, commercial plumbing, industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter are the people with the solutions. The same-day service, weekends included, they have the right people with the right equipment. That's why they've been in business since 1978, serving Jacksonville and the surrounding area. Call Metro Rooter at 695-1911. That's 695-1911, or visit MetroRooter.com. Our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars today is Metro Rooter here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, coming down the stretch here, Metro Rooter Wednesday. Thanks to Brian Sexton for popping in today with his ranking of the top 5 defensive players in Jaguar history.
Candace singing the lyrics as he's walking down the hall.
Which one?
This.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, mountaintop. Hacker, we were just discussing his knowledge of this particular song. So, Hacker thought the song was, instead of Jeremy spoke in class today, was Jeremy spoke in Grace Man.
What?
What in the world could that have possibly even meant?
I don't know.
Like, he only spoke in, like, dinnertime prayers, it, man?
I wish I was there when someone explained what this song actually was.
Mom. I remember him singing it like this. Back in the Jeremy spoke in Grace Man. I mean, what in the world? What in the world?
It's not even close.
No. Jeremy spoke in Grace Man. What does that mean? I don't know, Hack. You made it up. You tell us. Seemed a harmless. Anyway, cut it right there. I probably should have gone to see him. Wednesday night. What am I going to do tonight?
Right.
Watch the Americans. Gonna watch that anytime.
Sure.
Probably sold out.
If they are coming back for the Foo Fighters, I'll probably go too.
I don't really care that much about the Foo Fighters, but
it's because I'm missing them this time.
Are they playing by themselves tonight? Is that the deal?
I don't know if there's an undercard or whatever.
Clearly, I remember. Clearly, I didn't care enough to even know they were playing tonight. So I certainly don't know who may or may not be opening for them tonight. But go enjoy Pearl Jam if you have tickets tonight. Crazy Adam LaRoche story we don't have the time to get into.
I actually saved a link for the ESPN story this morning with Adam LaRoche because it's been trending on Twitter for the last couple hours, and I'm curious to see what his side of this whole thing was, but apparently it includes freeing sex slaves in Asia.
Yeah, something about going undercover in Southeast Asian brothels, something like that. Deadspin's write-up on it says ESPN's insane Adam LaRoche puff piece features LaRoche liberating sex slaves. So you got that going for you,
Oh, okay.
I guess, if you're Adam LaRoche.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if he takes his son to those ventures as well.
I hope not.
You know, hey, come on along, boy. Let's learn about the real world. All right. Tony, today we asked folks to rank their top five.
Yes.
Jaguar defensive players of all time. As we turn our attention to Twitter first, what do we get?
Here's what we got from Allison. Number five, Darryl Smith. Four, Rasheem Mathis. Three, Tony Brackens. Two, Marcus Stroud. And number one, Donovan Darius. From Eric, T-Brack number one, Stroud two, Rasheem three, Darryl Smith four, Big John Henderson five. From Duval Doom, Donovan Darius four, John Henderson or five, John Henderson four, Marcus Stroud three, Tony Brackens two, Rasheem Mathis number one. From Jarrell, a tie five, Stroud and Henderson. It's hard to separate those two guys. Number four, Hardy. Number three, Darius. Two, Brackens. Number one, Rasheem Mathis. From Chris, in no order here, Tony Brackens, Darryl Smith, Marcus Stroud, Rasheem Mathis, Paul Puzlesny. Getting a mention there from Cristiano, Brackens, Darius, Henderson, Mathis, Stroud.
Yeah, we told you Matt voted for Miles Jack in his top five earlier. Yeah. That was nice. A lot of love for Donovan Darius amongst our listeners here. Let's go to Russell, who went with Rasheem Mathis, is on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Rasheem, Donovan Darius, Tony Brackens, Marcus Stroud, Mike Pete slash Darryl Smith is a tie for fifth place. That was in the order that he liked them. Steve Muncy went with Donovan Darius, Tony Brackens, Darryl Smith, Rasheem Mathis, Marcus Stroud, assuming that was the order he liked them as well. Brackens won for Lee Markham. Brackens, Hardy, Stroud, Henderson, Mathis. You're going to find Mathis in practically every top five, although not completely across the board. Sean went with Brackens, Henderson, Stroud, Mathis, and pick one of Smith and Peterson. I thought it was interesting getting the input Brian Sexton did from Darryl Smith, talking about why Paul Puzlesny should rank highly because he didn't have the help. You know, having Stroud and Henderson in front of you makes it easier to make plays. You got to have the talent to make the plays. Darryl Smith is an overlooked player. I think he's been an overlooked player in his career league-wide.
Sure.
Even among Jaguar fans. And we're seeing his name mentioned in here. You didn't hear a whole lot of talk while his playing career was going on that this looked like one of the best defensive players in Jaguar history.
No, and it probably is a little bit of a disservice to him that he wasn't
Absolutely.
Talked about more in that kind of regard. There is an interesting debate when you talk about the Jaguars all-time linebacker group, because I think there's four of them that you can make a strong argument for being in that group, with Darryl Smith certainly in there. Paul Puzlesny, I think, would probably be in there, and Kevin Hardy, along with Mike Peterson. I think it would be difficult to differentiate between all of those guys and who does and doesn't deserve to be a top five defender. And along the defensive line, it's tough to pick out two defensive ends, but it's kind of the Rasheen Mathis debate where it's not tough to figure out one. Where Tony Brackens is so far and above anybody else that has played that position in Jaguars history that there's an argument as to whether he's the best defensive lineman in team history, but there is nobody that comes close to Brack when
in
it comes
terms
to the
defensive
end.
I agree with you here. And Brian Anderson on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, said, have not heard much of Schmengi. Well,
he's a good player.
He's a good player, right. I don't think he
it was a fun name.
Right. He's not going to get in many discussions of the top five players in team history on that side of the football, but a very good player and, you know, certainly should be proud of the career he had. Somebody also texted and just went to the stadium to make a payment on my season tickets, and Allen Hurns walked in front of me. How cool is that? You know, it would have been cooler if Allen Hurns had said, this one's on me, bro.
Right?
I got you, bro. Don't worry about it. All right, I'm making, even as an undrafted free agent, I'm still making some decent coin.
Hope he said hey.
Yeah.
Allen's a cool guy.
He's a super nice guy.
Stop to talk to you, probably.
Absolutely would. Most of these guys are like that. By the way, we saw Dante Fowler Jr. walk in yesterday.
He was working.
He's looking svelte, man.
Yeah.
My man was sweating, definitely, but he looks, as Dave Caldwell says, oh, you got to take a look at him. We haven't seen him, you know, back on the football field yet, but he looks like he's been working hard. He looks like he's in tremendous physical shape.
We'll see him on a field probably in a month and a half or so, right?
I don't even need to see him then. You know what I mean? Like, I want to hear that everything's moving along at the pace, and we all want to see him and get past the initial couple of practices. But you know what I'm saying. There's plenty of time for Dante Fowler Jr.
Sure.
to hit the field, make sure he's 100% healthy before he does. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Ryan O'Halloran's going to join us tomorrow on the broadcast. Hopefully David Garrard on Friday. So thanks again to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Thanks to Brian Sexton for jumping in on the program today as well. Congrats to Rasheen Mathis for a terrific career and a lot of life left ahead of him, man. And it's going to be a fun time to be Rasheen Mathis with that playing career behind you, coming back to Jacksonville to settle in the city that you've lived in most of your entire life, getting a chance to retire on a one-day contract with the Jags today. He deserves all the kudos coming his way. So congrats to Rasheen Mathis, one of the truly great Jaguars of all time. That does it for us today. So for Tyler Devitt, for Joey Bag of Donuts with his Fortunato 27 jersey on, coming as close as he could to honoring Rasheen Mathis today. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're signing off for Jaguars today. We'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime coming up next right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.